We're back. It's Thursday. Thank you for inviting us back into your homes or into your ears if you happen to be listening to this as you're maybe out running, socially distanced, of course, or perhaps in your car. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this is Julian Lawrence, and we're going to do this fair, balanced, and unafraid.
Let's go, Gab. We've got a big show today again with a special guest again.
We do. We have a world champion, no less. It's from the FC show. It's Mr. Frank LeBeuf. We'll be talking to him a little bit about defending. We'll be updating you on what's going on with the return of the various leagues. Today, Thursday, is really a crunch day. Hopefully, it'll be one of those sort of formality days. And then we'll be talking, of course, Serie A also closer to returning. Portugal already back. We've got the V team.
Yeah.
Dude, it's going to be a tremendous show. Let's start at the very top. Today is the day, Jules, that the Premier League teams, video conferencing, of course, are going to effectively vote to move into the next phase, which is the one where they're actually going to play football. We've had so many leaks and things come out in previous weeks. You know, everybody got excited, like, oh, the Premier League back June 17th. There's a few more hoops to jump through. But we're there. Like, basically, we're at the stage today where if they don't all vote unanimously, it will mean that some people were very, very sneaky, right?
Yeah, you're right. It would mean that, although you would expect, really, as you said, we're getting so close now that they could find solutions or answers, at least to the questions that they all have, and they all differ, I guess. Obviously, neutral venues, if it's something they have to discuss, what happens as well if you start the season again, but you can't finish it because there's second waves or there's too many positive cases or anything that could happen, what do you do then? You know, how do you sort of close the season if you want, if you can resume it but not completely finish it? So you only play two or three match days, for example. What happens then? I think that's another issue and another point that they would have to discuss with, you can expect maybe people not really being on the same page in terms of what do we do if we have to stop again in 2 weeks' time.
That's a really interesting point, because in Italy they said, okay, fine, we'll do it. We'll have a plan B, which is if we only have a couple weeks where we can play, maybe later we'll have playoffs. And they had a plan C where they came up with this algorithm which would take into account schedule strengths and whatever. Now, what happened is the teams don't like the playoff idea. And they've basically, I think, I'm tempted to say they don't understand the algorithm because they went against it. They said, no, we're going to go by points average. I mean, this all still needs to be approved, but they really don't like the algorithm idea. Like, whatever you decide, it's much better to decide it ahead of time, have everybody sign a contract, have everybody say, look, we're going to settle things this way if we can't finish, and we won't sue you. And you know what? If you can, make the championship clubs do the same thing. Reach an agreement. I would hope that they could do that. In Spain, interestingly, they haven't done that. Tebas says no, because that's admitting the possibility that we can't finish. Which, you know, I'm like, all right, Tebas. I mean, I know we owe you a tremendous debt of gratitude, because without you, this wouldn't be happening. But come on, man. Like, is it really that hard?
You can't just be too positive or too optimistic. It's great to be, and Tebas has certainly been all the way, but you could also, you have to factor somewhere the possibility, even if it's a very slim one, that you might not play your 12 remaining match days or 11 for Serie A, 9 for England, 11 for, or 10 for La Liga, or, you know, whatever many left you've got in Germany either. So that's certainly, certainly, that I think you're right. You need another plan just in case things don't go right. There's also for the Premier League, what do you do financially with the TV rights if you can't play all the games, all the matches? You know, what would Sky want? What would international broadcasters want as well? How much money? When do you pay, etc., etc.?
In some ways, that part of it, which, you know, they have reached an agreement. They're going to offer a rebate to the Sky and the other broadcasters. Although very cleverly, they've managed to negotiate it so that they won't have to pay it until 2021.
Yeah,
so they're going to give money back in 2021, which is good because it's going to keep the cash going. I mean, good, good if you're a Premier League club owner, I guess. I think that part is less of an issue. If they have to stop down again, how do they sort out the money?
Yeah, that's why I would say more. Yeah,
the Premier League are in a strong position. In a strong position, right? You know, the whole like possession is 9/10 of the law because they actually have the money. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, of course.
So I think maybe that.
You remember in France where they hadn't been paid the last two installments? It was a different dynamic, obviously. Yeah.
So I don't know. The way I see things, I think I'm confident today is the day that everything gets rubber stamped and it sails through. The neutral grounds issue remains, but I think it's only relevant if people use it as a reason to vote against it. The indications we have thus far is that that's not going to happen. But again, we're taping this Thursday morning. We will have an idea very, very soon about how things shake out.
We talked on Monday about teams who would have a lot of training sessions in the stadium, behind obviously in an empty stadium, to get used to them playing behind closed doors. There's also the possibility and the idea that you could play some friendly matches if they're allowed by the Premier League or, you know, whoever against you play in your own stadium, again, to get competitive games before the league starts again. And also to get used for everyone to be used to playing in games in empty stadiums all around the country and stuff. This is a positive thing, right? This is the right thing to do if they can.
No question. If you can do it safely, I think it can only help you. You know, for some players, they would not have played under these circumstances before. Football can only do so much. Ultimately, it will be the government and it will be the pandemic who will go and will determine this. The latest round of tests, very encouraging here in England. Just one positive out of 1,100 odd tested. That was a case at Tottenham Hotspur. But, you know, we have to see what happens as they ease the lockdown beyond football. And I was looking at the infection rate here in England, remains the second highest in Europe after Sweden. They have roughly the same number of new daily cases as they had in Italy on May 2nd. So, you know, if you use that as a metric, you're what, just over a month behind and you're easing lockdown. So, you know, I think we've criticized the Premier League in the past. Now they're going, and I think they've done things correctly. And I'm just saying, roll on. June 17th, bit of Arsenal and City, bit of Sheffield United and Villa. Yeah. And let's get things going and then let's get things going safely. Now, Jules, one other thing that we're going to be doing, it's kicking off next Monday, June 8th, inshallah, is ESPN's FIFA 20 League versus Leagues tournament.
Now,
the battle of the leagues. Now we've always debated, you know, which league is better. Look, this is not a scientific thing, but what we've done is 8 ESPN writers, you're one, I'm one, we got a whole bunch of others. We've each been assigned a league and we picked 23 man squad out of those leagues. And we're going to treat it like a mini tournament. Two groups of four, round robin, then the semifinals, then the final. There are certain rules there, of course. No more than four players.
The way you pick your squad, no more than four players per team that you could have in your match squad. So you can't have the whole Liverpool team if you wanted, or the whole City, or the whole PSG, or the whole Bayern Munich team. So you have to be clever as a manager, you know, and make the right call tactically in terms of personnel, who you start, who you have on the bench that can come in. Also, we need to stress, this is a simulation. We are actually not playing the game of FIFA with our teams.
Yeah.
It's the computer and people at EA Sports and FIFA who are doing it. But we make the call on who we start, what formation, you know, all the
tactics
that you could bring in. This is all down to us. So let's see. I mean, I'm really excited to see how this pan out.
I mean, now you'll be playing with Ligue 1.
Yeah.
So just to quickly recap, I'm doing. I'll be playing with the Bundesliga.
Your favorite country, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, easy there. Sid Lowe naturally doing La Liga. Nikki Bandini, she's doing Serie A.
Yeah.
Mark Ogden, the Premier League. And you're wondering, those are the big five. What are the other three leagues that we have in there? Well, we have Liga MX. That's going to be Tom Marshall. Yeah. We're going to have MLS. That's going to be Noah Davis. And we're going to have Brasileirão.
Brasileirão, yeah.
Brazilian Serie A. And that's going to be Gustavo Hoffman. So have you already assembled your squad?
Yeah, I've worked on it a lot, I have to say, because, you know, what do you do with which PSG player do you pick? Which Lyon player? Who do you get at Monaco?
I would suggest you pick Mbappe.
Well, I'm going to decide this because, you know, I think you should pick Lewandowski. But if you don't want to pick him or play him and you rather play Erling Haaland, then you can. Or both of them together. Would you do that? Would you play them both together?
You know what? I'm still Italian, so I'm still safety first oriented. I do have some, like, no, seriously, my normal instinct in this, and it might be the wrong approach in FIFA 20, I don't know, would be, all right, safety first. I have some fast guys. I've got Timo Werner as well.
Yeah.
So just pack the team with center backs and defensive midfielders and, you know, unleash maybe Werner, Sancho, and Lewandowski at the other end.
Oh, my God.
That would be my natural instinct. But I don't know. Does that work in FIFA 20? I'm curious to see.
Me too.
I'm curious to see what Sid Lowe comes up with. You know, because, yeah, we can name a bunch of great players at Barcelona and Real Madrid. And there's great players elsewhere too. But, I mean, does he find room for our boy Odegaard in the team?
Yeah. Did you play Piqué? Did you start with Piqué at the back? I'm not sure if Piqué...
He's going to be tempted to go Piqué Ramos. Oh, I know my Sid Lowe a little bit.
He's
going to be tempted. And who do you think Mark Ogden's goalkeeper is going to be?
God, yeah. But if you go with Alisson, that means you can only have then, you know.
Three other City players in the squad.
Yeah, Liverpool players in the squad. So do you go that? Same with the fullbacks. Do you go both Robbo and Trent? But then, you know, like, it's tough choices for him as well to make. Big time.
All right. I think as long as he doesn't put Luke Shaw in his, squad.
If he
does that, you know, I think we're gonna have to get him some therapy. So anyway, so
but then I think if he does that, he won't last long in the tournament. Do you know what I mean? I think this is gonna be really, really brutal. If you make the wrong call as a manager, your team is out. You know, you lose a game. That's the best thing.
I'm psyched to see what the draw is. I don't know as of right now if it's gonna be seeded. I assume it will be seeded because it would be stupid to have the Premier League, La Liga, Bundesliga, and say all together. And I say that without any disrespect to MLS
or whatever. But that's normal, yeah.
You know, I expect it will be seated. And, I mean, we'll get more details. We'll pass them on as it goes. If you want to hit us up on social with some suggestions, by all means, please do so. June 8th, Battle of the Leagues. Jules, it's an absolute privilege now. I believe he is the first World Cup winner to appear on the Gab and Jules podcast this season. So a big shout out from the FC show to Frank LaBeouf. Welcome aboard, Frank.
Thank you very much, Gab. Hi, Jules. I'm very, very honored to be the first one, you know. I know you're very special people, very famous people, and to be your host is a real privilege.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's just the way things have worked out this season, but you know, you are the very first one. I want to get straight into it because I want to get into a subject that you did your entire career, or at least one, not your entire career, but mostly you played as a central defender and you came to England. And I remember this because I'm old like you and I remember you playing here and
everybody
was like, ooh, Frank LaBeouf taking the ball out from the back. He's like Beckenbauer and whatever. And that was partly because, I can say this nicely, a lot of central defenders in England at the time weren't there to pass the ball. They were there uniquely to head the ball away and to run really quickly and tackle people. Is that fair? Can you talk a little bit about that dynamic?
Yeah, that's the truth. And I think those defenders were right. We are defenders there to, in fact, go against the beauty of that game, scoring goals, and we are there to stop. I played in the academy with David Ginola, and we were challenging each other because we were playing in the same position as a number 10 offensive midfield player, and so my formation was more as a midfield player than a defender. Then when I was 20, I came to Laval. and they put me at the back, and it worked very well.
Sorry. I just want to jump in there just to be clear on this, right? Because, you know, I'm thinking of the film Sliding Doors, right? So if you hadn't been the same age and on the same youth setup as one of the most handsome and most talented players that France has ever produced, you might have had your whole career as a number 10. Is that right? If Ginola wasn't there.
No, because I remember once putting him on the bench and taking him out, you know, when we were in Toulon. But it was as true that he was absolutely fantastic before being absolutely handsome. He's a real talent. And I think my real position was there because it's a real leadership position on top of being less demanding physically talking, where I wasn't strong enough, you know, my physical capacity wasn't strong enough to become a midfield player, and I regret it because I think it's a better position. But I found the best position for me on the field, leading my friends, helping them out to get in the right position where we were defending, and also being able to be the first counter-attacker. And that was perfect for me. But it's true that the cliche and the image of what we saw when I first came, it was a difference between, let's say, with all due respect, Tony Adams, Martin Keown, even Southgate, who wasn't very happy to see me when I first came because of first guy who can hit the ball properly at the back. He didn't like it. I know, I remember that. But it was a difference. But I think, in another hand, I was a less good defender than they were.
So what do you think the biggest change has been between when you were playing and now in terms of defending? Is it that actually? Is that you were a bit before your time and now there's far more players like in your profile as a centre-back than they were, you know, 20 years ago or whatever?
Yeah, yes. I think, unfortunately, I brought a new fashion with Laurent Blanc. Laurent Blanc has the same background.
Yeah, he was number 10 as well, yeah, like you.
He was number 10, but remember Franz Beckenbauer was a midfielder before becoming a sweeper. And I think we started to change little by little the thought about the defender. And now it goes the other way around, let's say. We talk about Sergio Ramos, a big friend of Steve Nichols, about the way that guy think about defending before attacking. And it goes for the wing back, but it goes also for the central defenders, where they aren't as defender that the player that I play against were at the time. And that's the main problem. But again, the meaning of football is to score goals, to attack well. It's better for spectators to a fan to see those kind of games because we see lots of goals. Sorry.
I want to ask one thing that's changed a lot in the Premier League, really many places around Europe, is there's a lot more high press on defenders. So when people try to bring the ball out of the back, a lot of teams will switch on the press, and you know you're going to have a striker up your backside, which maybe you didn't have as much when you were taking the ball out of the back for Chelsea 20 years ago. I'm curious how you view that, because on the one hand, when you get pressed, if you're not comfortable on the ball, it's a problem. Yeah. But also, when you get pressed, it means the other team is all out of position, so you've got more passing lanes, more opportunities. Yeah. Would you have enjoyed today's game more than back then?
I would have been more under pressure, as you said, and sometimes it's frightening when you see that they start from the back and they push themselves to kind of in compulsory go and start from the back. And sometimes I say, wow, they're crazy. It's too much risks. And I wasn't ready to accept that. But now that I think about it and you ask me the question, because of my, let's say, ability, I don't want to be too vain, but my ability to control the ball, I would have, let's say, like Manchester City does now with their goalkeeper, I would get the ball quickly and kick a long ball to my striker because I will jump two lines on the field, and that would have been interesting. And I was capable of giving long range passes, so it was a plus. And I would have done that. But I think playing like we see Barcelona, we see even Manchester City playing very close to their own goals, trying to pass the ball and go forward. I mean, it's so risky that sometimes I'm scared for them.
When you watch defenders now, when you watch a game, do you put more of your focus on the defenders, on the centre backs, simply because this is your position and stuff like that? And who really impresses you? You talked about Sergio Ramos, of course, Virgil van Dijk. But is there anyone in particular that you really, every time you watch him, you think, wow, this is one of the top?
There are many of them, but let's say that Koulibaly is somebody that I really like, the guy who plays for Naples, and I think he's a real defender. But you mentioned Van Dijk. Van Dijk is absolutely fantastic, and he seems to be very easy every time he controls a striker and he has to defend against him. But you have many players that I like. The little Camara from Marseille. Or even Marquinhos in Paris. They're absolutely fantastic defenders. And I like their mind. When they think about football, they know the position they have. And it's why I was naming Sergio Ramos. Is we have to defend. The first function of a central defender is to defend. After, it's a plus. If you can bring a good ball, if you can, like Sergio Ramos, score goals at the last minute to win a trophy. But your first thought should be, how to defend well against your striker of the day.
Well, on that note, I want to put an idea to you that I remember I had a conversation with Owen Hargreaves about this. Mm-hmm. And he said that football coaches are very stuck in their ways and always, like traditionally, you know, your left back was left footed. Your right back was usually a central defender who was too small, so he plays right back instead. And your two center backs are both tall. They both have to be 1.85 meters. These days, probably 1.90 meters. And he said, I don't understand why people think that way. What I would do is I would have a very tall central defender who's good in the air and strong. Mm-hmm. And I would have a smaller, quicker guy. Mm-hmm. Because so much of the time you're asked to defend in transition, you're asked to defend one-on-one, that, you know, height really only matters so much mostly on set pieces where you can match people around any way you like. And then in the open field, you'd be better off having a smaller guy who's maybe more agile, like a Marquinhos type, but obviously, or maybe even smaller than that. And he also said that when you jump, it helps to be tall, but you can always put off even a taller, stronger player if you're aggressive enough and you know how to do it, and it doesn't matter how tall you are. Can I get your thoughts on that?
It's very interesting, and you have a little of an answer with Barcelona when they put Mascherano at the back as a central defender. He was playing for Liverpool as a midfielder and came down to central defense with Barcelona. Of course, I don't like stereotypes. I don't like people who think that you have to be technically weak and very strong and very tall if you're a central defender. Remember also that my position as a sweeper doesn't exist anymore. So you had to anticipate many actions. You had to feel the game and also be fast in the first 10 yards to cover your teammates. Now it's more flat defense with a covering, but a mutual covering. But I agree with our grief. I think you have to think about all the situation you can have defensively, but also offensively when you will get the ball back. So having somebody smaller allows you maybe to have somebody faster, and also maybe somebody, will be able to cope with all situation in a small area. So it's an interesting thought, and I agree with you. But we know at first when we thought about football, we say, okay, you're not good enough technically. You can't score goals. For the first, you go to goalkeeper, or you're going to be into defense. That was the backup, you know, of anybody who loved football. But that's still there, but less and less.
Fullbacks are also more attacking now than they were when you were playing. How much does that have changed, and how much more difficult maybe it is now for a centre backs when sometimes both your fullbacks are, like, you know, almost in the last third of the pitch, in the other side, and you're left there with your other center back next to you, and sometimes you 2v1 and stuff like that. How much do you think that would have changed the role of a center back to have so many attacking fullbacks now?
It would have been very boring for me, because you know you can't you have to think about defending, and that's it. And that's true that on the width, it's the way it's where you have to attack, because you have less people, and it's normal that the wing backs are going forward. But I think it's a complex of it's a system of compensation, and we all know that all the midfield defenders, let's say number six, like N'Golo Kanté or Anderson, they cover. It's what you have to do. Makelele was the master of the masterpiece of the system, where when Roberto Carlos was going forward, every time he was going in his position, it's what I will do. I will keep my two midfielders and say, okay, uh-huh. If somebody goes forward, you're gonna cover, because in case there is a counterattack, you have to cover. I mean, I'm still thinking about the Italians and Baresi and all the defense, Maldini, Baresi, Costa Curta, and Panucci, where I saw and I played against them, and I saw so many games where they knew that with four or five players you can attack, but you need to be at least four or five players behind the ball in case you lose the ball. And sometimes you see the team in the new generation, we say, oh my God, if there is a counterattack, they're gonna be in trouble. Yeah. So we are a little bit, I think our generation, we are maybe too conservative, but they are kind of kamikaze sometimes.
It's funny when you mention that Milan back four, Arrigo Sacchi was talking about this drill that he did, where they would play a game where you would have the goalkeeper, you would have the Milan back four of Maldini, Baresi, Costa Curta, or Filippo Galli, and Tassotti or Panucci. And it would just basically be the back four against 11 players or 10 attacking players. And, you know, those were Milan, and they would do this in training. Those were Milan's attacking players. So, you know, we're talking Van Basten, Juli, Donadoni, Ancelotti. Got a lot of talent there. And basically, they would see how long it would take the 10 players to score.
Yeah.
And all the defenders had to do was just clear the ball to the halfway line, and then they would start again.
Yeah.
And you would think 10 against 4, players of that quality, you would score straight away. But it doesn't happen when you're organized. How is that possible?
Gabby, you just threw me back to almost 20 years ago with Viali as a coach.
Funny,
and,
right?
And us doing exactly that exercise, that for like an hour, we played 11 against 4 at the back with a goalkeeper, and we never conceded goals. That's crazy, because it means that when you're well organized, you don't try to do crazy thing when you have the ball, because you say just kick the ball away, but you have the mentality of, okay, we don't want to concede goal. We're going to work together. We're going to compensate, cover each other. The goalkeeper is going to be there, because you cannot do anything against a shot from 30 yards in the top corner. That's what it is. But if you play well and you cover each other, it's going to be a hell of a nightmare for even 11 fantastic players or 10 fantastic players to score a goal. And it's the case. You just named Milan, but we did it at Chelsea, and it was horrible, and they got crazy. And we had also Torreira, Refro, Mark Hughes, I mean, Laudrup, Viali, Gudjonsson, fantastic strikers, fantastic players. But Zola, they couldn't do it.
Well, there you go.
I don't have the explanation. I don't know. Maybe they weren't that good.
you never played in Italy. And maybe you would, as a defender, you would have liked to play in Italy. But you had Italian managers. You played with players like Marcel, who spent a long time in Italy.
Yeah.
And could you tell that there was something about defending that the Italians knew better than the others, or were ahead of everybody else, because of maybe that's more in their DNA than us or the English or the Germans or whatever?
That's true that they were kings of defending, and that was a lesson. Every time you love to see how they were moving. I played against Baresi and in the European Cup with Strasbourg. And I remember him not even talking. The three other players as Gabby mentioned, Galli, Costa Curta, Maldini, they were just looking at him when they got the ball back and they were going forward. And he was just putting his arm like that and saying, okay, go forward, go forward. And he didn't talk, he just put his arm. And they were moving like a machine. That was unbelievable. But I never wanted to play in Italy because I wasn't that type of defender. I loved attacking. I scored goals in my career. I liked to go forward. And it was like you couldn't go further than the half line in Italy. And I saw Laurent Blanc suffering when he went to Naples. And even if he scored goal, they had a good season. He was hammered. He was better after with Inter Milan. But the first year that he came from Milan, it was really a nightmare. He loved to go forward and he was criticized for that. And I said, okay, I will never go. I think I had Lazio and Fiorentina interested about me. And I went to Chelsea because I didn't want to go to Italy. It wasn't my type of football. And when Ranieri came, it was less like that with Vialli. But when Ranieri came, I got bored very quickly. He's a fantastic man. He's a lovely person. But his thoughts about football are not my thoughts. It doesn't match. It doesn't match. It's not the way I want to see football.
Frank, thank you so much for your time and for this symposium, this clinic on the art of defending.
Okay, thank you very much, guys. Next time we're going to talk about penalties.
Okay, as great as Frank was, it's that time. It's time for some quick hits.
Let's go, Gab.
Now, Jules, let's start close to home. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is out of contract in June 2021, as we all know. Are they talking to him about a new deal? Do they want to dump him? Do they have any idea? Do they need to wait to see if they're going to be in the Champions League next year?
Well, there was a bit of excitement, I think, on Monday from Arsenal fans because the L'Equipe newspaper in France wrote that the club had offered Aubameyang a new deal. Unfortunately or fortunately, but it depends. It was not the case in the sense that they haven't started properly talking concrete talks about a new deal and what the future holds because of the pandemic, because I think they're really focused right now on being as ready as possible for when the league resumes, which is fair, and then after that they will talk. It's very clear, as you know it. It's either he's happy to sign a new deal and the club wants to keep him for longer. He's 31 at the end of the month. So you also have to be careful of what you do. You can't give him a 10-year deal when he's 31, but there's that bit. If he doesn't want to sign the deal or you can't find an agreement or anything like this, then it's either you sell him now and get a bit of money, maybe 20, 25 million pounds, or you keep him and he runs down his contract and then the following summer in 2021, he goes for free. It's a tricky situation, and he's not the only player, by the way, at Arsenal right now with just 1 year left on his contract. It's a scenario that a lot of clubs have with some big players or less big players, but it's something that they will have to sort out. And I'm not even sure what the best solution is right now.
I'm not even sure who could take him on, although there's been suggestions he could be Barcelona's plan B. I think that might actually make, if they don't get Lautaro, I think that might actually make a little bit of sense in some ways. On the other hand, it's another 30-something with an enormous wage.
FIFA urged member FAs to apply common sense in deciding whether to punish players who exhibit political message during games, Gab. The Bundesliga has said it won't punish the players who ask for justice for George Floyd. It's the right decision, right?
Yeah, look, I got to say this. I made this point on Monday, I made this point in my column. It is the right decision. And those people who come out and say, oh, but it's a slippery slope because, you know, what happens next time when Serbia plays Kosovo and somebody puts out the Kosovo eagle, the Serbian eagle, whatever the hell it is, and or Qatar or with Saudi Arabia. Guys, the fundamental principle that you should not use your shirts and your football to send a political message remains. This is what FIFA are saying. This is not what it's for. It's not a commercial message. It's not Nicholas Bettner's underpants. You can't do that, right? But there are certain messages that are so universal, like a message against racism, which, you know, FIFA guys, whether you agree with it or not,
of course,
come out with those t-shirts. Or locally in Germany, is somebody saying justice for George Floyd? Is that in any controversial? Yes or no? No, I haven't heard a single person in Germany saying that, well, there shouldn't be any justice for George Floyd. Nobody has said that. So move on. This is a common. This is not something that is divisive within Germany. Now, it would be a different thing if, you know, if it were a different message, or if it were in a UEFA game or a FIFA game, then they would be the ones to decide. They're saying let people decide locally what is offensive, or what is divisive, what is political, and what is not. I have absolutely no problem. And in fact, I think this was a common sense decision. You know, this whole slippery slope thing, not everything has to be written down in Napoleonic law. You know, there is such a thing as case by case.
But I would have still liked to see the yellow card that Jadon Sancho received for taking his shirt off. And I know the yellow card was for taking the shirt off, not for the justice for George Floyd message underneath. But I still would have liked to see that rescinded. It won't be, and I can move on now. But I would have liked it.
Fair enough. Now, in addition to the pandemic, Major League Soccer was also dealing with a labor dispute, which made the return unlikely, with owners threatening a lockout. But now there's an agreement, and we'll see MLS teams back soon. And in Orlando, at ESPN's or Disney's Wide World of Sports, no less.
Yeah, you're right, Gab. I mean, first, you're right, the dispute between owners and the players. The players' union yesterday announced that they found an agreement until 2025, I think, to avoid a lockout like we've seen in recent years in other US sports as well. So that was good. And then, obviously, getting near to finding an agreement to start the season again, you're right, in Orlando, in a different way than how the season would have been without the pandemic. But I think it's good that MLS will be back, more or less pretty much at the same time as the NBA will be back, also in Orlando, by the way, which is pretty funny. So you could probably go from one soccer match to one NBA game by like just a short distance, which I would like to move to Orlando right now, to be fair. It's
the
best place to watch sports.
Jules,
as well.
Jules, it'll still be behind closed doors.
So I know, but for us, reporting on games.
I got you.
When La Liga returns next week, Real Madrid won't be playing at the Bernabeu. Is that right, Gavin? If they're not, where will they be playing?
They'll be playing at the Estadio Alfredo Di Stefano at the training ground. And you know what? If you're fortunate enough to have a mini stadium, and this is a mini stadium, it's a 6,000-seat stadium, hell yeah, use it. Why would you want to go and go into central Madrid with the buses and everything to go and play at the Bernabeu? You know, there's no reason. There's no fans there. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, not everybody's the luxury of this. They're getting floodlights installed. They're getting VAR facilities installed. Makes so much more sense. So much more sense.
And even for Real Madrid players themselves, you know, they would be staying there. They've got hotel facilities at the training ground. They stay there. They go and play in the training ground. I think it's far more easier for everyone. And like you said, it's easy access in the middle of nowhere, off the motorway. It's brilliant.
Diego Armando Maradona shocked some doubters when he kept Gimnasia up last season. Jules, now he's sticking around.
Yeah, he is, Gab. Great news. He signed a new deal, 1 year more deal. I mean, they stayed up when the season was finished as well, before the end. Maybe they would have even been finished higher in the table. We won't know, but at least they stayed up, and that was his job, and he successfully achieved it. So good on him. It would be good to see him and the reception that he gets in every single away match. Next season as well in Argentina. I just think he's great. You might not like him as a manager. You might not think he's good enough or whatever. But to have such a character, I think, in Argentine football involved heavily like this, you can bring him like a king chair everywhere he goes. I don't care. But I think he's great. So I'm really happy for him and for Gimnasia. And you know that won't end well. Probably in 3 months' time after the season restarts, he might get the sack. But hey, let's enjoy it.
But you know what? Like, he's obviously doing this because he likes coaching and he likes football.
Yeah.
He likes being out there. You know, he could sit on a chair and act as a pundit and make more money on television than saying and doing crazy things, or he could be back in the golf. So this obviously means something to him, which I think is pretty cool.
Well, from one Argentine legend to another, German Mono Burgos is leaving Atletico Madrid. He was the assistant of Ancelo Simeone, of course, and now not anymore.
Yeah, he was his part assistant, part bodyguard. My favorite was when, because obviously Mono Burgos, he looks like a wild man, right? I mean, he looks like a professional wrestler. But I remember when he got my favorite picture of him ever is when he got those Google Glass things, and he's like standing there with like these, like, I mean, he's easy to caricature. He's obviously played a huge part in Simeone's football at Atletico Madrid. apparently he's leaving because he wants to have a go on his own. So good luck to him. It's kind of like a more likable version of Rui Faria.
Oh, I mean, do you think that could have an impact on Simeone? I mean, we saw when Buvac left Liverpool and Klopp, and I think Klopp was...
Fell apart after Buvac left, didn't they?
No, but not fell apart. But you see what I mean? I think there was a bit of time where you needed to adapt and it's a change and everything like that. I guess it would be the same, right?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I'm always very skeptical. We're not there. We don't know how much assistant actually matters, right? We always get this, oh, he's just trusted assistant, trusted lieutenant. You know, I mean... Every situation is different. Every dynamic is different.
Yeah, true.
Now, we didn't have a COVIDiot of the week last time. We have one now. It's Phil Foden. What's he done, Jules?
Phil Foden went to the beach. Not sure really that was a good idea. And then
Can we all clarify? I'm a little confused about it. Wait a minute. Like, Phil Foden lives in Manchester. What beach? He went to Formby, which is what the English call a beach. And there's sand there, and there's water, and if it's sunny, I just want to make clear, it's not like, dude was in like Copacabana. It's not the sort of beach that most people think in terms of holiday beach. It's more of a north of England type beach.
Yeah, but it was still very sunny and very hot, and there was a lot of people there. And then once he was there, he started playing football on the beach, which I guess you could do, not really social distancing. And then he thought it was a good idea to take photos and selfies with fans who obviously recognized him. And it's just one of those that players have to be careful like everybody else. You know, the lockdown has eased a little bit, so you could do a bit more things than maybe 2 or 3 months ago, but you still have to be careful. So I think he will get told off and everybody will move on.
Yeah, it's another, there's a whole pandemic aspect to it. I think there's also a whole safety aspect to it as well. I mean, you're playing football on the beach. What if one of these guys mistimes a tackle? It's still England, right?
People are
aggressive. True. People do get competitive and you hurt yourself. It just seems such a weird thing to do.
Bayern Munich traveled to face Bayer Leverkusen and your friend Peter Bosch this weekend, Gab. If they are to lose the title, they have to lose it there, right? They play Leverkusen away, as you said, this weekend, and then at home to Gladbach the following weekend, so the following game. So those next two games will probably decide it, you think?
Well, I think it's largely already decided. I mean, this is kind of like total grasping at straws time, I think. But yeah, look, Leverkusen beat them earlier this year. Gladbach also beat them earlier this year. They would have to lose those two games. They'd have to lose or drop points somewhere else. And, Dortmund would have to go and win every game. I mean, it's basic arithmetic here.
Yeah.
I actually think Leverkusen could get something out of this, despite their weirdo ups and downs that they seem to have with Peter Bosz, just because Havertz, maybe the emotion. Put it this way, it's not a game that if you're Flick, you want to take lightly. You just want to get the business done, get your points here, and move on.
Do you think similar plan than they had against Dortmund, where you could just be efficient? Even a draw is not a bad thing, to be fair.
No question about it. I think that would make sense. I think it's easier to motivate your players to play that way against Dortmund than it is to play against this bunch of bosses. Peters. It's just the way they play. Look. Now Portuguese football is back, and there was a shock when Porto returned Wednesday night.
It was, Gab, you're right. They were aware of Famalicão. Remember, we had them on the show when they were top of the table. They were the sensation. Now they're not so much anymore. I think they're 7 or 8. But they pulled a big shock by beating Porto 2-1 yesterday the title race was just 1 point for Porto ahead of Benfica. Benfica play tonight on Thursday night at home to Tondela. So they can go back ahead of Porto if you want, after Porto's mistakes. I was not too convinced about Sergio Conceição's team, the setup, the changes that he made in that game.
Fitness issues. I think we got to give
Porto had a lot of the ball.
Selection.
I mean, they had a lot of chances. Rafael in goal for Famalicão was amazing, made some big saves. So, in another day, I think Porto win that game. But, hey, they didn't yesterday, and now they could find themselves second in the table.
By the way, let's show Sergio Conceição some love, because I think he came up with the best analogy of football behind closed doors. He says, it's like eating a salad. I love eating salad when I have some really good dressing to go on it. The fans are the dressing when it comes to football. And eating salad without dressing is kind of yucky, but if you need sustenance, it'll provide it.
Gab, I was in crossover heaven when I saw that 1990s Madonna dating, cross-dressing, NBA god of rebounding. Dennis Rodman devoted a video message to Andrea Petagna, the SPAL striker. What's the deal then? How much did he have to pay? And did Dennis Rodman really know who the message was for?
Well, it's interesting you assume that he had to pay. Yes, he did. Somebody did pay to get this message. And equally, you know, the fact that he called him Andrea throughout suggests to me that he has no idea who Petagna is, but they did tell him he was became the bulldozer. All right.
Did he think that was a girl? Did he think he was a girl? Be honest.
What he later said that, you know, his own daughter, whose name I don't recall right now, like, you know, also plays soccer and she's going to play against the one guy. I did wonder about that. You know, how much does the worm actually know about what's up here?
That's like, amazing.
I just like these. This was just so random, you know. I'm like, but Petagna, by the way, shout out to him. They call him the bulldozer because he's literally built like, I mean, he's built like a warehouse. But, you know, he's a good, solid, hardworking striker who, you know, I think could be moving on to bigger and better things, even if Spal don't get relegated, which I think they will.
Yeah.
Now, your buddies at RMC Sport are reporting that Pep Guardiola rang up Milan midfielder Ismael Benacer. Gee, I wonder who told them. Probably not Pep, I'm going to guess. Jules, does this flirtation make sense? Would Benacer be a good fit at City?
So I find this very interesting for a few reasons. The first one is he's not Pep's type of holding midfielder, really. You know, he is not the one that could do Fernandinho used to do. However, Pep can certainly make him into a new David Silva in the sense that I think Benacer can be one of the most complete midfielders in the world.
He can David defend, Silva, he can, really?
Yeah. I think he can be an amazing number eight in the sense that he can create, I think. He's good enough technically to create. I know he plays a bit deeper and he had a fantastic year, I thought, with Milan once he adapted to the new team and change of manager and etc. But he had a wonderful African Cup of Nations with Algeria when they won it, for example. He can play, he can be creative. I think he can defend. He runs a lot. He's a very intelligent player. Okay, he's small and short and he's not the tallest and he won't win the ball in the air. But I really would like to see what kind of player Pep can make of him.
I see him more as a Gundogan type without the stupid mustache that Gundogan grew last year.
But don't you think he can also play a bit higher and be more efficient in the last 30 yards, in the last third?
It's not what he's about. I mean, so can Gundogan, theoretically, remember. I mean, yeah, he's done it before. I don't know. Possibly. I mean, I'm so used to seeing him in that sort of playmaking role that he played at Empoli and stuff.
Yeah,
it's different
a
little bit with Algeria. But a tremendous footballer. He has a release clause reportedly of 45 million.
Yeah,
I think 50 million euros, which would be a tremendous piece of business for Milan as well. Although I think Milan look at it and say, you know what? This guy can get even better. So
yeah. Ryan, finally, Gab, both Adidas and Mercedes are reportedly not extending their lucrative sponsorship deals with Mesut Ozil. Is it just getting older, or do you think there's more to it? What do you think?
I mean, obviously, Ozil's had a lot of bad press. I would assume that it's just though because he's getting older, because, you know, he has a certain, when people sign sponsorship deals, it's because a guy has a certain profile. He was playing for the national team and he was playing for Arsenal. Now his contract is winding down at Arsenal. It's not clear how often he's going to play. I think we can pretty much take it as read that Arsenal will not give him a new deal. If I'm paying this dude to go and promote my wares and he's not in the limelight, doesn't have the visibility, I think that's all it is. I'll go and pay somebody else who's more in the public eye. I think that's what happens. I don't think it's, you know, as some people have suggested, I don't think it's some kind of vengeance against Ozil for some of the political views he's expressed in the past or indeed for some of the issues he's had at Arsenal.
And maybe he doesn't want to, you know, to work with them anymore as well. It might be good for him too. And, you know, he might think, you know what, it's time to maybe have a change and, you know,
make less money.
No, but, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe that works for him.
He can focus on his coffee shop empire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His post-retirement future.
Quick Hits was great, but now it gets even better. It's the Alphabet 11, brought to you by the letter V for victory.
V, Gab. And again, thank you to all of you who send their teams creative or not so creative. It depends for the V team. it was not the hardest letter. Let's be honest there. You know, I mean, loads of like Dutch, for example, starts with V, as we know. I tried to get Virgil van Dijk to play. He didn't send his team as of yet, but he might do later today. But we've had some really other good ones. Our friend Ibet16, who is a big fan of the show and of the Alphabet 11, sent an all Dutch male and female V team. So for example, you've got Sari van Venedel from Atletico Madrid in goal. You've got Van der Heijden from Feyenoord at the back with Van Dijk, Van de Graaf and Van Vermeskerken. You've got Van de Beek, Van Cleef, Van de Donk and Van de Streek in midfield and up front. Shanis van de Sanden, the Lyon star, and Van La Parra from Red Star Belgrade. So an all V male and female 11 there from eBay 16. We've got Aniket with an 11 of Van, so they're all Van. Van Kromge from Anderlecht in goal, Rom Dongelen from Hamburg, Van Dijk, Van der Hoorn, Van Arnold, Van Bergen from Heerenveen, Van de Beek, Van Ginkel, Van der Heide from Heerenveen as well, and then a front Van Wolfswinkel, who still plays at Basel, by the way, and Van
Super Buren. Rick.
Yeah, Super Rick. Van Buren from ADO Den Haag. How awesome is that?
Rick Van Wolfswinkel and the perennially injured Marco van Ginkel in the same team.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe one last one, Raul Calvapale with the old Vasquez 11. Ivan Vasquez from Juarez. Jaime, Johan Vasquez, Elias in Guatemala, and Jason Vasquez, who plays in Peru. Lucas Vasquez, Franco Vasquez, John Vasquez from Cali, and Jose Vasquez from Chivas, and up front, Alvaro Vasquez from Gijón, and Victor Vasquez, who is now in Qatar, and Fernando Vasquez, the Depor manager, as manager. So a whole Vasquez 11. Well done to Raul.
Very impressive. Shall we turn to some ladies 11s? And of course, I got Sophie Lawson here, punctual as ever. Also has Sari van Veenendaal at the back. Also going at the back, Northando Vlakazi at right back. God, this is going to be a slog with all these Icelandic names. Gladys Perla Vigosdottir and Laura Fetterlein and Elisa Vidarsdottir make up the back four in midfield. Valerie Vigilucci, Jana Wojtekova, and Fanny Vago. And then up front, Lisa Debana, Erika Vasquez, and Lucy Von Kova.
Really good. And I'll give you my Miguel Galan V team of the week. I mean, this one is pretty special as well. It's a whole Venezuela women 11. He says it's too easy to do Belgium or Netherlands.
Stop. A Venezuela women's 11.
He did a whole Venezuela because it starts with V as well. So that's not just double point. That's triple, quadruple points from Miguel Galán. He's got Jessica Velasquez in goal, Vasquez, Vergara, and Viscunia back three. In midfield, Valesillos, Villasana, Velasquez, Villamizar, and Veloz. And then the two up front, Karen Vilau and Isora Vizo, who plays in China. So well done, Miguel, for the whole Venezuela Women 11. What about yours, Gab? What's yours?
I went a little bit more traditional this week, although I was tempted to have Giampiero Ventura as manager, the one of the most hated men in the history of
Italian
football.
Yeah, maybe not.
For good obvious idea. Reasons. I got Thomas Vatslik in goal at the back. Simon Versaico, Virgil van Dijk, and your boy, Raphael Varane.
Yeah.
And because Varane is so quick to make up for it, I made up with left back. I have Jan Vertonghen.
Okay,
especially
good.
A left back, I thought was interesting. Midfield, Arturito Vidal, still King Arthur. Donny van de Beek, who is one of my favorite players ever and looks a lot like Dutch from Karate Kid, of course. And how could I not have the PSG legend, Marco Verratti? Come on, man.
I was hoping.
Now, in the hole, of course, El Mudo Franco Vasquez. And up front, Jamie Vardy, who's having a party. Because if you chat spit, you get smacked. And Vlahovic from Fiorentina, who's a guy I hope we get to see more of after the break. A very talented, very young striker.
Yeah. Good, Gab. This is mine then. I've got Vlachodimos from Benfica in goal. I've got a back four of Versaco, like you, a right back. Varane and Virgil, like you, are centre-backs. But at left-back, I went for someone different than your choice, Vertonghen, and I went with Van Aanholt. Simply, and I have to admit it, to troll Crystal Palace and their chairman, as you know, people who've been following us for years now know that we have a bit of a beef with. So, hey, Van Aanholt is there. I've got.
By the way, it's not Crystal Palace. It's just him. It's just Steve. Just to be clear on this. I have nothing against Crystal Palace.
No.
In fact, I really like Mark Bright.
Yeah.
One of the good guys.
Yeah, one of the good guys. In midfield, I've got, obviously, Valverde, Fede Valverde, and Marco Verratti. I've got Donny van de Beek as the sort of free player, play wherever you want, number 10 playmaker, whatever you want. And then up front, I've got Vinicius on one side, Carlos Vela on the other side, and Vlahovic in the center.
No room for Jamie Vardy.
No, I think...
Is he paying for the sins of Rebecca?
Maybe, or he can party if he wants. It's just, you know, he could be Vlahovic's dad, pretty much, almost.
Just for the avoidance of that, we're both on Team Colleen here. Yeah. No question about it.
Of course.
All right, that brings us to an end. We're going to be back on Monday with the Gab and Jewel show. So join us then. A lot of things coming up around the corner. It's hitting fit and fast. We're going to have the cast verdict for Manchester City. We're going to have, obviously, inshallah, the Premier League restarting, Serie A restarting, La Liga restarting. Dude, it's all happening, man. Enjoy the song.
And the W team. I mean, good luck with that one. The W team on Monday.
Bunch of Welsh guys named William.